It's your True Faith Newcastle United podcast. Newcastle United once again beaten by 3 goals at home, just like we were against Brighton, and if possible, in an even more horrific fashion. 4-1 was the final score, and you've got Alex Hurst, you've got Norman Reilly, and you've got Ben Wade to talk through the grisly details, and probably more than just the grisly details, the bigger picture and why this, I think, this is possibly the end. It's certainly the end of my support of Steve Bruce. I think he has to go. I'm going to get into that. A lot of fans will disagree, and that's entirely fine. We can have those discussions. Norman, I'm going to start the show with you. Steve Bruce, after the game, spoke to both the national press, the local press, and rip-off pay-per-view television press, and said that basically he thought we were unlucky. The scoreline didn't reflect the game. The only issue was we were a little bit naive at the end. How do you assess his analysis and why?
Well, I'll just start off by saying straight away, I thought you were lucky to only lose 4-1. It could have been a lot worse. It was an absolute massacre. I genuinely have no idea where those comments come from. I suppose the only thing I can say, right, look, I'm a 43-year-old fan. I've never been involved in the professional side of the game. Ultimately, I clearly know nothing because I watched that game yesterday and thought it was an absolute horror show from, what, like 30, within 30 seconds of us taking the lead, we were utterly abysmal. And for Bruce to come out and say that, and then for me to see a match report on the BBC, which has one of the bylines, Magpies impress despite defeat. and for the Telegraph, one of the bylines in the Telegraph to say, both sides played their part in a thrilling contest. I watched that game. Both sides played their part. We played our part, as far as I can see, because we were actually on the pitch. So, you know, you are part of the game, aren't you, I guess. But the byline suggests that it was a fairly even game and a thrilling contest. For a start, I don't think it was thrilling. It was a training ground exercise and incredibly uncomfortable to watch for me as a fan of Newcastle. I fail to see where we impressed in that game, despite what the BBC have said. And obviously, Steve Bruce's comments after the game, saying that, you know, the defeat doesn't look as bad as it was. I can't see any justification for any of those headlines or for what Steve Bruce has said. So I'm just going to say that I clearly know absolutely nothing about what to expect from football. I've been watching it since I was, 8 years old. So that's quite a while. And I clearly have never learned anything because what I think is a decent performance or what I think is a thrilling game or what I think is an impressive performance clearly doesn't match up with what the experts say. So I think I'm probably just going to retire after this podcast from comment never again, mate.
It's just, I want to just echo, I think you are wrong, Norman, because Ollie Solskjaer saw the game exactly how you did, so that can't be right, surely. Well, he thought they dominated the game and they played brilliantly and it could have won by more. I mean, Ollie Solskjaer has been living in a fantasy world this year, I think, so I think, and as I say, he seems to have seen it the way Norman did, so. Something's not adding up here. Either Bruce or Solskjaer is telling lies here. So, and I'm more inclined to go with Steve, who's been in the game a lot longer.
Yeah, I find his comments genuinely offensive, and we've talked on the podcast before about the danger of potentially reading too much into what he says compared to what actually happens on the pitch. I think there's no way he makes those comments if the team have been hounded off the pitch by 52,000. I think there are a number of wider issues at stake here, and we're going to get into them. But I want to be clear to everyone listening. The main problem with what we saw last night is that it will happen again. That performance that you saw last night, it will happen again this season. And that's the issue. You know, I've wrote the True Faith match report this morning, and I've done my research, and I looked at, you know, I looked at a number of games this calendar year, so I'm not even going that far back, this calendar year, where we had basically gone into a game, decided to give the opposition all of the ball, as much as they wanted, pretty much, and as much territorial dominance as they wanted. So if you want to play the game in our final third, that's all right as well. And in 8 games this year that I handpicked, we'd conceded 186 shots in those games. So this isn't like a bad day at the office. This isn't like some sort of one-off catastrophe that you can pin on an individual error or a red card. This is how, and I mean this sincerely, unless someone wants to get in touch and tell me I'm looking at it wrong, this is, last night is how Steve Bruce planned that game to go. what you saw last night, what you saw against Spurs, what you saw against Brighton, what we saw against Newport, what we saw against Blackburn, what we saw against Liverpool at the end of last season, what we saw against Manchester City, Crystal Palace, Norwich, Arsenal, Chelsea, Everton, all last season. We approach these games in an identical fashion, which is like I'm, you know, obsessed about. You know, I watched the match with Si last night, and it was like, what is the plan here? You know, what is the plan? What are we trying to do? Because we don't play counter attack. We don't. How many counter attacks do we have last night? Like, you know, we do not play counter attack. We conceded 3 goals in the counter attack. How is that possible? How is it possible when you're trying to play counter attacking football that you concede 3 goals and many more opportunities on the counter attack? I cannot stress enough that there is no plan beyond Bruce picking the team, picking a formation, and from that point on, in my opinion, it is on the players to work it out. And nothing symbolizes that more than going 1-0 up in the farcical manner that we did. It was hilarious. It was fantastic. What an opportunity that was to press on. Let's be clear. Let's remember. These are some key points I want to ram home. Manchester United this season, before yesterday, had the worst defensive record in the Premier League. In their last game, they conceded 6 goals. 6. They could have conceded 10. They conceded 6. Against Brighton this season, they conceded 2 goals. Brighton broke the record for the most number of times a team hit the crossbar or the post in a game, and they scored a goal after full time, which is also ridiculous, but never mind that. They played Crystal Palace. Crystal Palace finished below us in the league last season, I think, and Crystal Palace beat them 3-1, could have scored many more. You know, for Steve Bruce to come out and say they can do that, they're a quality side. They're not a quality side. They are not a quality side. They had a good end of last season. They've got some very good players. Lots of teams will do very well against that Manchester United side this season. And we have gone into that game. He's picked a mental 4-1-4-1. Like I've said in the match report, Luke Shaw's gone to bed on Friday night, probably unable to sleep, thinking about, is he going to put St. Maximin on my side? Is he going to play Almiron? Will Ryan Fraser get a run out against me? How am I going to deal with this? The fans think I need drop. There's a new lad come in to play left back. Who does he line up against? Who is Luke Shaw's man for the night? Joe Linton. Like, I just can't fathom it, Norman.
I'm slightly concerned. Going back to the comments, the post-match comments, right? Like, everything you've said there, bang on. Now, you look at the post-match comments, I thought... what was it he says? Sorry, he says... Let me quote it exactly. This is about Man U. They will not have enjoyed what happened last week. Well, yes, they got beat 6-1. We found it very difficult. There's no disputing that. They will do that to teams. If you leave them space, they have lightning pace at the top of the pitch. Right, so... If you leave them space, they'll have lightning pace at the top of the pitch. So why do we leave them space then? Who does that come down to? Like, who is being blamed for that there? Like, so on one hand, you know, it wasn't a bad performance. But on the other hand, if you leave them space, they'll destroy you. So who is it up to ensure that we didn't leave Man U space? Is it the players or is it the manager? I can't work it out. So I'm just baffled. I'm baffled by the kind of post-match comments. And again, I think I saw another comment. Newcastle scoring too early was maybe like the wrong thing. It's like, is the purpose of a football match not to win it, right? And in order to win it, you need to score goals. So how can a team take the lead at the wrong point in a match? Is that like a thing? Is it possible to take the lead at the wrong point in the match? I can't understand. So again, I'm going to go back to, I clearly know nothing about football, because everything I saw yesterday has been, you know, it's kind of been washed away. Like, no, we scored, yeah, we took the lead, but we took the lead too early. That's probably why we lost, because we took the lead too early. You can't leave them space because they'll destroy you. And then me asking, well, why did we leave them space? But we did, and there's no answer to that. So I'm just thoroughly confused, mate. I truly am.
It's also, you know, I mean, to go back to the point you've made there about scoring too early, I think it was Keith Downey on Twitter from Sky Sports. And I think the point he's trying to make, and the point others are trying to make, is that they assume we had a game plan to sit tight, make it difficult for the opposition, reduce the number of chances that you concede in your penalty area or just outside of your penalty area, and then you can concentrate on trying to hit them on the counter-attack, getting up the pitch later in the game as the game gets a bit more stretched. That makes sense to me. I disagree fundamentally that there was ever a bad time to take the lead. But ultimately, there is the assumption there that we have that plan is false. You know, like I say, let's go back to Spurs away. Let's go back to Man City away, Manchester City at home, post-project restart last season. Tell me what you or any of these people, what have you seen from Newcastle United that suggests that we have any kind of tactical plan in these games beyond just letting the opposition have lots of shots on goal and hoping your goalkeeper, like I said last night on Twitter, like when your goalkeeper plays class and you concede four, it's the kind of thing, like I remember growing up, like watching in FA Cup games, you know, when the keeper plays really well and they still get hammered. But, you know, to be fair, it's not his full-time job and the Premier League team should win. This is becoming a regular occurrence. Me and Norman off air, we just talked about, like, you can think of all the games last season where you're like, Jesus Christ, Dubravka pulled us out the shit there. You've got a game last night where if Carl Darlow, who we'll talk about later in terms of his injury, if he doesn't do what he does last night and saves a penalty, there was the part where he got injured, the save against Rashford there would have counted, by the way, because Rashford wasn't offside. It was a brilliant save. But if he doesn't make those saves and if he doesn't make some of the interceptions that he does, Newcastle get beat 6-1 at home. But the manager's all right with that. And it's like, there's no process here. There's no learning curve. There's no, right, this is what we took from this fixture and we'll take this into the next fixture. It will be same again. And I'm sick of recording podcasts and thinking about and watching this side of his play when nothing ever gets better. There is no hope of the next time we play Manchester United at home or the next time we play Man City away. There is no hope of doing anything else than just conceding like up to 30 shots in a game. Like we behave like a League Two side going to Old Trafford. If a League Two side had gone to Old Trafford against that Man United team, like how could they have possibly done? How can you allow more than 28 shots on your goal in a game? It's like it's almost there isn't time in the game to allow more than 28 shots in a game. Yet we do it consistently, Ben.
It is. It's crazy. It's almost as if Bruce needs like a few absolute hidings, like as you say, like 7-1s, 8-1s, which have been feasible. And as you say, we could have quite easily had that already a couple of times a season. It hasn't happened yet, and I suppose that. It's still, I mean, we've been beaten 4-1, conceding three goals in the last, well, in there was 4 minutes, it was 86, I think, when the second one goes in. Mm-hmm. We've managed to concede three goals in a short amount of time. And he's kind of brushing over that, saying, oh, that it was as if that was just bad luck. But this could have happened and could have been a lot worse. And it's almost as if we need these like 7-1 hammerings for it to drill home that, no, this isn't bad luck, Steve. Like, this is how it's turning out. And in normal, it's one of those things where people say, oh, well, you don't expect to score every goal at this level, like every shot at this level and stuff like that. But as you say, when you're getting 20 plus shots a game, I mean, if you don't score like 1 in 3, you've got to be asking questions. And it's like, it's almost as if it's going to take like a number of hammerings for it to sink in with Bruce that actually this isn't going to work. And that's the most terrifying thing is that it, like what is he? He's clearly not watching the games, and the stuff that he's coming out with is absolutely mental. That he thinks this is an acceptable way to play. It's just it is like I literally do not understand what he's saying that is given any sort of encouragement. And that just I mean, you talked briefly about the formation there. Like so we went for that 4-1-4-1. He's basically dropping Hayden into that sort of holding midfield role, and we mentioned it last night when we were talking during the game. It's almost as if he's trying to play five at the back, but didn't want to play five at the back because of he probably thinks, oh, you'll get hammered for playing five at the back again. But basically played Hayden in such a deep role, and he was dropping into that back three that it ultimately worked out like that. And it's just he doesn't really have a clue. But it's almost as if like now he's kind of like picking his team to sort of placate some of the criticism he's had as well. It's just a bizarre like series of events and sort of the way he seems to be reacting to things. So the other thing is that Man U team, so you're talking about, obviously people are giving Man U a lot of respect. Like this isn't Manchester United as we have known it during our lifetime. as you say, this is a team that's been getting, just been hit, gotten probably one of the biggest hides they've had for a while, and could have had others. You've already seen a team like Palace go to Old Trafford. Like, wasn't it Selhurst Park? It was at Old Trafford. And they were well worth that win, and could, again, in that game, could have probably got more. And you look, any other manager in the league, I think, looks at that game and analyzes that and says, right, there's a blueprint there. What Palace did, that is the way to deal with this Man U team. Yes, they have got some great players. Bruno Fernandes is quality. I didn't think he had his best game yesterday, but he has the ability to hurt you.
Should score a hat trick.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I don't think he even played that well. And as you say, could have had a fair few. But you look at that Palace team, and to be honest, in terms of man for man, we've got quite similar players to they've got. We could have deployed a similar tactic and played that same way. And yet ours just looked so far away from that. It's embarrassing.
It ties back into the kind of the logic behind, you know, the comment of maybe we scored too early, which I do get what you said there. Like, I absolutely understand that. But as you said as well, it's not like we set out pre-match to play like, oh, keep it tight, lads, and we may hit them towards the end. And if that was the case, you have to ask yourself, well, why? This is a team who conceded 6 goals at home to Tottenham, 3 goals at home to Palace, 2 goals away to Brighton. We're the home team. We're the ones who won our last match. You know, why would we be set up to play like that against a team that is in utter disarray and a team who, against Spurs, if you look at how they defended against Spurs, you look at the goals Spurs scored, they were absolutely shambolic. And all we needed really was to, in my opinion, just to attack them. They were panicking. We go 1-0 up against Man United. For me, that was a perfect 1-0 up so early on. That was a perfect opportunity to just attack them again, hit them again, because this is a side that is in absolute disarray. And we didn't do that. So, yes, I understand the logic of playing a tight game and trying to strike late. You know, we've done it in the past. You think about Man City at home, we beat them 2-1. I guess to a certain extent, you think about Chelsea last season, beat them 1-0, although that was farcical in many ways. But against this Man United team, why? Why would that be the tactic? If that was the tactic, you have to ask yourself, well, why would it be the tactic? Because this isn't a brilliant side that we're playing. This is a side that we, on our day, with the right players on the side, and we have got the right players, could have seriously damaged, because they aren't a good side yet. We afforded them the respect that you would afford, like, the champions of Europe. It was, to be honest, as a fan, it's actually quite painful to see, like, such a meek kind of surrender to an opposition, almost like, oh my God, you're so good. Like, well, there's nothing we can do to beat you. It was shocking.
It's a team as well that is massively lacking in confidence. You look at Luke Shaw's basically just been replaced in this transfer window. With the lad that they've basically waited till the last day of the transfer deadline to do. So they were that desperate that they forced a deal through, that they were obviously haggling around and probably didn't like the business side of it, but the hand has been forced because of his performances. So he's under pressure. He's had a bad start of the season. He's low on confidence. Got Lindelof, who's been dropped recently, who's had to come back in because of other injuries and things like that. You've got to keep Rinder Gea, who has been world-class for a number of years, and in the last couple of years, he's completely dropped off the boil, making loads of mistakes. Like, this is a Manchester United team that plays under a massive weight of expectation as well. People expect them to be able to dominate games like they did last night, but aren't normally able to, and have massive frailties, and they're like, really, really low on confidence. They're fragile. You saw that against Spurs, and I know Spurs are a better side than we are. Obviously, we saw the game with us, and Spurs obviously put 6 past them. But I'm not expecting us to have necessarily won 6-1, but like there's opportunities there if you apply your game plan properly and sort of set up a team plan properly, that there's opportunities there to get at this team. Even Wan-Bissaka, I mean, Wan-Bissaka scores a worldie at the end of the game. I don't really remember him being put under too much pressure. He's another one that was a big price tag, has a lot of pressure on him, hasn't had a great start to the season. And then obviously the big ones, Maguire. Maguire's had a terrible game for Man U. Then he's gone away to national duty, had a stinker for them, been sent off after 30 minutes, we've lost to Denmark. Like, and he's come back in and been forced to play again. Like, how are you, man, lad? Some, like, just that's literally the perfect game you'd want to play against Harry Maguire. He's had such a stinker. Like, get into him, like put him under pressure, like test him out. Like, he's got all sorts going on, and we've literally like given him the most comfortable game of his career. And that, it, I just, I don't understand how Steve Bruce, and it's not necessarily even just Bruce, he's met the whole team around him, like how have none of them identified that as well, this match is a massive, massive opportunity. And as you say, we're saying as if scoring that early goal was a bad thing. That should have been the thing to kick on. Like we got gifted a goal from absolutely nowhere with the most fragile of confidence team in Manchester United that they've probably had in a long time. And they're 1-0 down after 2 minutes. Like it wouldn't have taken a lot to really put the pressure on them. And we've done completely the opposite. We've then allowed them to get back into the game. And even then, it's taken them to the 85th minute to start getting these chances. But like I can obviously see because I watched the match, but from Bruce's standpoint, I don't understand what how even at half time he hasn't said, "How are lads? We're still in this. Like we can get something out of this if we start doing these things." But none of that has happened. There's been no adjustments during the game. There's been nothing to change the way that game is going. And as you say, it's just a massive, massive opportunity. And people are saying, "Oh, it was a terrible time to score." Bollocks! Like that was literally the perfect time to score. Like you could have put Manu under real, real pressure there, and we've completely left them off the hook.
There's a few things I want to get into there, and you know, I'll say it again, once again, just like the Liverpool game at the end of last season, Bruce, in my opinion, has been exposed by that goal, because, like you say, Ben, if indeed the plan was to sit tight, frustrate, and play counter attack, which I've seen no evidence that's the plan, but I'm going to assume that like there must be some sort of like desire to do that. Then, like you say, you change. But I go back to when we played Norwich at home last season, and you know Norwich came to our place, and I think they were pretty much relegated, and we were still playing five at the back at the time. And I was with Adam at the game, and we both noted that the first 5 or 10 minutes of that Norwich game was a dream for them. No pressing, no pressure. Take as many touches as you want. You want touches in the final third? Have them. You want to run 20 yards with the ball as a centre back? Yep. Everything that we do facilitates the other team. We are a dream to play against. And Ben, it was the same last night after that goal. You're spot on. The whole, you know, I mean, I'd say the world was watching. Yeah, the world was. The United Kingdom wasn't because of the unbelievable cost. But like everyone's watching that game. Every Man United fan's like, here we go again. Shit. Like, disaster. But it's like Bruce in his Newcastle United side, like, don't worry, lads. Don't worry. We'll let ease yourselves into this one. Have the ball. Have it. Have a shot. Go on. Cross it. Do you know what I mean? It's just we are an absolute treasure and a delight for opposing teams, particularly big teams, because it's one thing, you know when teams go away from home and teams make it hard for them, they still might win games. No, I don't think there's a tremendous shame in losing to Manchester United at home normally. I've seen us lose plenty of times to teams worse than Manchester United last night. However, like you, everything that you said, Ben, about the type of team we're facing, the kind of problems that this Manchester United team have, we played them last night like the European champions. We played them last night in a way that was so deferential, and when I'm saying the same fucking things every week, so deferential that it's almost like we're just happy to be there. We're happy to be on the same pitch as them. The 16th in the league before last night, for fuck's sake. 16th. It was a free hit. We had 7 points from 4 games. League Cup semi-final on the horizon if we beat Brentford. If you were ever, as a manager, going to try and grab a game and make a difference and create something special, it was last night. And for it to go in the manner that it did, for it to peter out, and for it to be such a humiliating bit of one-way traffic for the majority of the game, despite the fact that it was miraculously 1-1 for so long of it, you know, it just... That's why I just feel that this is not going to change. There isn't some better version of Steve Bruce. There isn't some moment down the line in his managerial career where he takes it to the next level. Like, this is him. This is his side. There isn't some training session around the corner. There isn't some signing which makes it all click together. This is the best it's going to get under him. Let's go back to Sunderland in 2011. What did the Sunderland fans say? He had good players. He did not know how to use them. He consistently picked players in the wrong positions for no reason. What did Aston Villa players say? Good team. Best team in the history of the Championship in terms of financial cost and wage bill. Didn't know how to use the players. Bruce has things which are beneficial to him as a manager. He is a good man manager. He is liked by the players. He manages on the whole to keep players who aren't in the team engaged. It's not enough in the fucking best league in the world, in the league that charges fans in its own country, £15 a game to watch the match in the middle of a pandemic. It's just not good enough. And it's okay because we are used to so much shit as Newcastle fans of just not good enough. But Jesus Christ, like, for it to be this bad, for it to be this unappealing, for it to be this hard to watch, and then the manager to come out after the game, just like he did in several of those fixtures I've alluded to already in this podcast, and say, well, that was all right, bit unlucky there, scoreline wasn't. Like, the bloke is an absolute bullshitter. He talks complete nonsense, and there's only one or two journalists in the Northeast willing to call him out, and we'll beat Burnley, and I'm as guilty of it as anybody. We will win more games this season. We will win more games. We will beat West Brom at home. We might get a result, I don't know. It's someone else shite, Fulham away or something. That's last day of that. But, you know, this is not Newcastle. Newcastle United aren't necessarily going to finish bottom of this league. They might not even get relegated. But I challenge anyone listening out there to tell me that there is some positive version of this football club under this manager. And as much as we all want the club to be sold, and as much as we despise the owner who seems as desperate as we are to end his relationship with this football club, the resources that this manager has are ample. And Ben, like you say there, to think Luke Shaw struggling, defensively struggling, to think Joe Linton on the wrong side, like after Joe Linton against Burnley puts in maybe the first 6.5 out of 10 performance in his whole Newcastle career, his best performance so far. Everyone, Shearer's been talking about it for The Athletic. Everyone's saying, behind the striker, he looks a lot more at ease. Callum Wilson in front of him, he looks much better. He can influence the game in a positive manner. To play him on the fucking right of midfield, when you've got Fraser on the bench, when you've got Almiron on the bench, fucking Christian Atsu would be a better option on the right of midfield than Joe Linton. I've never seen anything like it, Norman. And I know you're not happy with this particular point as well.
100%. Truth is, yesterday Joe Linton, the thing is, you don't want to criticise him as an individual. Look, I think it's quite obvious that he's not a particularly talented enough player to make it in the Premier League. But let's park that for a second, right? The manager has picked him and put him in a position where he's probably never played in his life and he never should play. He's not a right midfielder. And I would be surprised if he touched the ball more than 10 times. I haven't seen the statistics. I tried to look for them and I couldn't find them, but his impact on the game was actually what I would say, like, it was like a negative impact, i.e. having him on the pitch in that position, it wasn't like a neutral position. It wasn't like, oh well, he's not doing anything, but that's all right, you know, he's not doing any harm. It was actually harmful, because what it did was it allowed Man U all that space. Like, as Ben said, I can't believe that Luke Shaw looked fat, apart from the howler for the first two and goal in the second minute, and again, my God, that should have shattered his confidence into pieces. But he was allowed pretty much from the third minute onwards to build up that confidence again, because he just had the complete freedom of that of our right hand side of the pitch. I don't get it. I don't get why Ryan Fraser, who went out and played for Scotland midweek, scored a goal, got man the match, is clearly fit enough to play now, fit enough to start games. I don't know why he wasn't started in a position that he can play in against a team that, if you attack them, would have crumbled. I cannot get my head around that. And I would genuinely love a journalist to ask him that, or for Brewster to just come out and explain it and say, look, this is my logic behind playing Joe Linton on the right-hand side. But the thing is, what right have we got to know things? I mean, do we have a right to know why decisions are made by managers? I guess we don't, right? But at the same time, wouldn't it be nice, or wouldn't it be a brave thing to do, to actually come out and say, this is why I played Joe Linton on the right-hand side? Now, Are there any Newcastle fans? Do you think there'll be any Newcastle fans who think it was a good idea to put Joe Linton on the right-hand side of midfield? I would be surprised if there were. And therefore, wouldn't it just be a good way of connecting with the fans to come out and say, I picked them on the right-hand side because of this? Because I cannot come up with one single reason as to why that decision was made. I can't. There is literally nothing okay. He played all right against Burnley. But the fact that he played all right against Burnley doesn't necessarily mean that's vindication for keeping him in the side against a completely different team and then playing him in a totally different position, does it?
To be honest, the only reason I can think is that Bruce noted that Shaw has had such a catastrophe and probably thought, if there's one player in this league that might look Joe Linton look up to this level, it's potentially Luke Shaw. But then they didn't even give him the ball to do anything.
They gave him the ball a couple of times, mate, and he just gives
lost
it away.
That's what I mean, isn't it? Wasn't particularly in any positions where he could do anything with it. It's just you look at that and just think. I mean, I don't know. It's just a disgrace, isn't it?
Just quickly, I'll tell you how easy it was for Manu yesterday after we scored. Basically, it was right. Newcastle are sitting back every time the break. If we just put three players around Maximan, which was what Solskjaer did, every time Maximan had the ball, he had at least three players around him, and we had nothing after that. Yes, we created one chance, I think, where Wilson, Maximan managed to get away, put a brilliant cross in, and Wilson studded it, and it was a great save by De Gea. But that was literally it. Now, it was pretty much our whole way of being set up yesterday was to just give Maximan the ball when we could, and what happens? We give Maximan the ball. He's got three players around him. He's trying to take out three players, and that was it. That's how easy it was for Man United yesterday.
Just on that, Norman, that's okay if you're giving him the ball in the final third all the time.
Exactly.
He's literally dribbling it out from Darlow, and having to beat four or five players. And to be fair to him, he's some dribbler of the ball. Like, his feet are tight, footwork at times is brilliant, but it's completely wasted when you're 70 yards from goal. Like, and eventually they just kick him and foul him, and it's the ref doesn't do anything because why would they? It's not really a threat or anything. It's not really a dangerous situation, but he's wasting so much energy at the wrong end of the pitch. And again, like, that is the point. Why isn't Bruce telling him just stay forward? We'll get the ball to you. Just stay forward and hurt them where they can hurt them. Don't drop deep and come and get frustrated and get the ball. And it's because he wasn't obviously getting any quality sort of possession at the wrong end. I mean, I texted at one point where there was a possession, there was a passage of play where we had a chance to break, and Shelvey and Hendrick both play two awful balls, and he basically has to then cut back and ends up putting Lewis in. But then Lewis has got one man to aim for on the box. And you just think, if we could have just played a bit of quality to get Maximan one-on-one against, it would have been Wan-Bissaka on that side. Like, he could have absolutely terrorised him. I mean, he's been beaten five plays for fun most of the game. Put him one-on-one, he's going to cause some problems, and we just didn't ever get him in a position to hurt Man U. And that's the most frustrating thing, is that it doesn't take a lot. It shouldn't take a lot, and we couldn't do it.
There were a couple of moments in this game which when I woke up this morning, I had to kind of just check that actually happened. One of them is the substitution of Isaac Hayden, who told Steve Bruce and his team at halftime he thought he'd done his hamstring, and he was sent back out, which has happened before, and he went off injured. Now, I said at halftime during the game yesterday, it's not working. All the things we're saying now, it was 1-1, and you know, I said we are going to lose this game. This is not working. The formation isn't working. The lack of pressure, the lack of pressing, all of it's not working. I assumed that there would be a change at half time, and there wasn't. And then when Hayden goes off, Norman, I want you to take this one, because I'm pretty sure it was the Man United away game and Watford away. Sorry, Man City and Watford away last year, when Shaw was tried in defensive midfield in both games, and you were vocal about how much of a disaster that experiment was. Could you quite believe what you were seeing yesterday when Isaac Hayden went off and he brought Fabian Shaw into midfield to replace him?
Absolutely not. I think when I saw Hayden hobbling at the point of going off, I thought it's terrible, because Hayden's obviously a very important player at the club, but at the same time, in this match where we are struggling to create anything and we're under this intense pressure that's of our own doing because we're incapable of attacking, I thought, well, the obvious thing, yeah, is to pull Henrik into centre midfield and bring on either Fraser or Almiron and make us a bit more of an attacking threat. But then to bring on a centre-half who cannot play as a central defensive midfielder. Shaw, as we know, right? Now, look, when we first signed Shaw and I saw him on the ball, I actually thought to myself, oh, he has a player who could possibly play in midfield because of how comfortable he is on the ball. But what you soon realise is that actually he needs to see the whole pitch ahead of him. You can't play in that. He just cannot play in that position. It was quite obvious after the first time he played there. But it's a position that he's been played in again and again. And it's always been an absolute, again, a waste of having a player on the pitch. And when he did it, I genuinely thought, like, again, much like putting Julian on the right-hand side, what's the logic? Like, what is the logic? I would genuinely love, right? Because as I'm going to say it again for the third time, I know nothing. I've never been involved in the game in any professional capacity. I'm not a coach. All I do is observe on what I see as a fan. So I would love to hear the logic of bringing on Fabian Shea, in a game where you need an attacking outlet, bringing him on for a defensive midfielder, putting him in defensive midfield despite the fact that he's not a defensive midfielder, and you've got evidence of that because when he's played there, he's been terrible. What's the logic? I would like to know what the logic is, and then if the logic is kind of reasonable, I'll never complain about it again. But honestly, lads, can either of you help me?
I can't. the thing with Shaw is that you're right. There's aspects there that he should be able to play in midfield. He's a good enough footballer. The problem with him is he wants too much time on the ball, and at this level, you don't get time. There was a moment in the match where I think it was Pogba. He nicks the ball off Pogba, carries it about 10 yards ahead of him, and he's still got the ball. And it's like, come on, mate, like give the ball, like get, like this is a great opportunity to counter again. And he's still got the ball, and I think Pogba gets back and nicks the ball off him, and they go on to another attack. And you just think that there right there is exactly why Shaw hasn't ever been tried as a centre mid, because he wants too much time on the ball. I mean, we've seen him score some unbelievable goals in Newcastle where he'll get the ball at centre back, and he's literally driven, like he's been given space to run into, and he kind of gets his head down and just goes, and he's good at carrying the ball. But again, there it's where he's not got that pressure of anyone chasing him from behind or anything. He's been able to survey the pitch, as you say. He can see the whole picture, you said, Alex, and he goes and attacks and knows what he wants to do. When he's in that position where he doesn't know what's coming behind him and he wants time to play the ball, he hasn't got it in midfield, so it just doesn't work. The other thing is he came on to replace Hayden, who, as you say, is an important player, or normally is an important player in this Newcastle side, because he's one of the best athletes we've got on the team. He's one of the most energetic. He literally does the running for two people most games. And yet you've completely nullified his biggest strength by playing him deeper than John Joe Shelvey and Hendrick. The fact that he basically was asked to sit in front of the back four and just marshal that space, where I'm assuming that the plan was they were worried Fernandez was going to drop into that and rule the game from there. Well, the reality is he didn't need to get control of the game. He didn't need to do it, and you've wasted basically Hayden patrolling that little spot where he didn't really need to. They weren't really attacking in that hole, but then what that meant was that you haven't got Hayden's energy to push to press. And you said, I think it was you, Alex, said last night at a couple of points where there was times where there was one man was going and pressing. I think you said it was Shelvey in one instance was the only one that pressed, and nobody else went with him. And then I think Hendrick possibly did it. And again, he was the only man to go. Like, Isaac Hayden is the man that normally goes with them. And how many times have we seen it in the past? I mean, the biggest one was the City game we won a couple of years ago when Longstaff and Hayden played together. You had Longstaff and Hayden literally pushing up into their box together as a tandem. And I think that's how we got the penalty at that point in that game that we win 2-1. Like, Isaac Hayden knows his game. Like, he is capable of being very effective. And that's why he became a mainstay of Rafa's teams, because he reads the game quite well. But you've completely nullified all of his strengths by asking him to play that discipline role where he can't use his athleticism. And then, as I say, when he goes off and you lose that athleticism and bring Shaw in, who isn't comfortable in that position. And as you say, just like he's showing that it hasn't worked. Like, why are you still trying to force that issue? Like, and especially in the way the game was going, why would you bring someone on to allow it to carry on the way it was? Like, surely that, okay, I'm sure that wasn't going to be one of the planned substitutions. They didn't want to make that substitution. But once you've got to make it, do you know what? Like, you've got a bit lucky. You've got an opportunity to potentially try and get back into the game and make, like, force a change. It's been forced on you, so don't take too much credit. But if you make the right decision there and bring on the right player, that could have turned the tide, that could have changed something. But at least try something different. Like, it's insanity not to put somebody on to go back in and basically repeat what has been happening all game when we've been getting smashed.
Everything you said there, Ben, I completely agree. And you know what's really sad about it is as well, is that this was like in the 49th minute, the substitution happened. It was like we brought on a centre-half and played him in midfield for an athletic midfielder in the 49th minute. That was basically us showing our ambition. Our ambition was to get a point out of that game. Our ambition in that game was highlighted in the 49th minute by bringing on a centre-half for an athletic centre midfielder and basically saying, yeah, we're going to shut up shop. Now against a team that that confidence was absolutely non-existent before the match, and that's indicative of how we were set up before the kickoff. If you look at it like that, we were set up to avoid defeat as opposed to go for a win.
It just that stinks of him trying to squeeze five in at the back again, and I don't know why he keeps trying it.
Yeah, Ben. However, Ben, if we didn't play five at the back, we'd be shit and get hammered all the time and concede those chances, man. It has to play like this.
It's the only way the players know how to play, Alex. Unfortunately, since I've been here, they don't know any other way. And I've tried my best, but I just kind of get them to drop this five at the back, even though we've barely played it many times.
That does bring me to the final point, and that's back to the start of the show and what Bruce says. And he talks about, you know, I forget the exact word, but it was like, this is a process, you know, this is a journey. And this is all in his own head. You know, like we said before, he inherited a team which had the 8th best defensive record in the league. Didn't score enough goals, but had the 8th best defensive record. Now, he says he's trying to make us more attacking, and what has to happen is, essentially, we have to get much, much, much worse defensively. We have to start losing lots of games by 3 and 4 goals, where we didn't before, and we will become more attacking, and it's going to take time. That is absolute nonsense. It is horseshit. We spent £100 million plus, had an £80 million strike force on the pitch last night, and we are worse. We are getting worse. Look, the Carl Darlow thing, but we haven't fit it in, but I mentioned before there were two things which I just was in disbelief at last. Well, three apart from starting Joe Linton on the right of midfield, but you had that, you had the Hayden sub, and then there was a point in the second half when, on two occasions, from goal kicks, we played the ball short,
start
playing out from the back, and I was just like, what the fuck? Like this is not the time to start something new. I was like, how has this possibly happened? Now, obviously, we lost the ball both times, and Manchester United nearly scored at least one of them. And then I realised it's because Carl Darlow can't kick the ball. And it's like, oh yeah, like just another layer of things you just don't really see in like other teams playing football. And however long you've been watching football or playing football or whatever, I've just never seen in the Premier League anyway, a manager like hobbling around grimacing for like 10-15 minutes to the extent where he cannot kick the ball and just cracking on. And as a team and as a squad and as a football club, just being like, yeah, fine. This is fine. This is absolutely fine. And I read today in the Chronicle that Carl Darlow has told the fitness team that he might be back for Wolves. It's like, is that how it works?
Like, to be the other around, right?
Yeah, tell him the severity of his injury and how long he will be out for. I don't know. We're in the twilight zone. Like I said before, we'll have to finish the show. Newcastle aren't the worst team. I think we might be one of the worst teams in the league, but we'll have some very good individual players. There's a really tough run of games coming up. I don't think that even if Bruce keeps us up again this season, there isn't this kind of golden future out there. Even if the club continues to spend money and continues to give him fantastic players, like this is it. This is, in my opinion, this is the best it's going to get. And I'm not going to change that opinion based on a win at Southampton or, you know, beating West Brom in December or getting a result at Leeds. We have been in the Premier League for 4 seasons now since relegation. We approach these games like a newly promoted club, but worse. We approach these games like a lower league team, and it's not good enough. It's not good enough for Newcastle United. It's bad for the league. And I'm sick of it. I'm sick of repeating myself, and it reminds me of the relegation seasons. You know, we said it in those seasons, or only been podcasting for one of them. If anyone was listening back then in 2015-16, you would do the podcast every week, and you would just repeat the same failings week after week after week. And whilst Newcastle aren't as bad against worse sides, like, you know, I'm not going to rewrite history or anything. Newcastle were decent against Burnley. I thought they were decent against West Ham and deserved the 6 points from those two games. Fair play. Well done. We've also, it's the first time in the Premier League era that we have lost two of our opening 3 home league games by 3 goals or more. These are the kind of records that are going to keep on coming. And if Spurs or Manchester United had scored six or seven goals against us, if Brighton had scored six goals against us, no one would have, could have complained. And that is not a healthy position to be. If you're pro Bruce, if you think he's going to do a great job, I wish I was you. I do. I wish I had your confidence. I wish I had that kind of comfort. I think that we'll either get relegated or be very close to getting relegated. But we have to finish the show. Thanks to you lads, Norman and Ben. I hope it's been a listen. I don't know if it's been enjoyable.
Cathartic.
Yeah, I was just about to say very cathartic.
Yeah. Thanks for listening to True Faith Podcast. We'll have another bonus show out this week about the 150th issue of the True Faith fanzine with a series of guests. And we'll be back for you after the Wolves game. So it'll be next Monday night that podcast is out.